Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Back in your life on this Wednesday, December 4th, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Hope you're doing well on this Wednesday afternoon. We are approaching the end of the decade. Holy smokes. We are also approaching the return of the UFC this Saturday, December 7th, Washington, D.C. They are back. Two-week hiatus. I think it was good for the soul. I think distance makes the heart grow fonder. Imagine if it was a month, 2 months. We'd really be missing them. But this has been nice. I've enjoyed it. Later in the program, we're going to talk to Mark Raimondi of ESPN about some of the big news of the past week. Of course, the return of Conor McGregor against Donald Cerrone, January 18th. The Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson fight, April 18th. And who knows what else? I will also reveal the four contestants, the four active UFC fighters who will be vying for the most prestigious belt in combat sports, the Nose World Order Trivia Challenge Belt. First winner back in June, Stipe Miocic, Chicago, sold out. We announced yesterday, round two, December 13th, Las Vegas. It's on my Twitter. You got all the information there. Tickets are on sale right now, the night before UFC 245. I'm hoping that more than five people show up. It's going down at Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club at the Link Promenade, right next to Caesars, if you're unfamiliar. Tickets on sale right now. Four UFC fighters vying for the Nose World Order belt. I will tell you who those four fighters are later in the program as well. But first, as you may know, as you may have heard on Monday's show, this is Jimmy V Week at ESPN. It's a very important week. 13 years they've been doing this in honor of the great Jim Valvano and cancer research. And today, December 4th, is being dubbed Stuart Scott Day. Sadly, back in 2015, the great Stuart Scott, longtime ESPN host, personality, SportsCenter host, anchor, passed away after a long fight with cancer. He was a big-time fan of mixed martial arts, a big proponent, loved the sport, trained mixed martial arts as well. And this Saturday's event in D.C. is being dubbed the Fight Like Hell event in honor of a very famous speech that Stuart Scott said back in July of 2014 as he was battling cancer, one of the most inspirational speeches in the history of the ESPYs behind the famous Jim Valvano speech around 30 or so years ago. He referenced the line, fight like hell. We played a portion of it on Monday's show. And because of his connection to mixed martial arts, because he trained mixed martial arts while going through chemo treatments and surgeries, and because he referenced that line, it just all makes so much sense. So today is Stuart Scott Day at ESPN. And when I think of Stuart Scott, and I think at, you know, I think of his time at ESPN, I think of the legacy that he had. I also think of another man. I think of his longtime co-host, his good friend. I think of the man who, for someone like me, meant so much. I looked up to these two. I think of Rich Eisen. Rich Eisen has been very kind to me over the years, and these days he does not work at ESPN. He currently works for a litany of places. Let me give you the rundown here. He hosts the Rich Eisen Show, which airs Monday through Friday from noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV's Audience Network, channel 239. Also streams live on BR Live. Also can be heard on Sirius XM and across Fox Sports Radio and Premier Radio Network. Currently is the host of NFL Game Day. Also hosts the NFL Network's Hall of Fame broadcast. He is the face of that network in many respects, and he's one of the greatest to ever do it. He also was a very good friend of the late, great Stuart Scott. And so it's a great honor to have him on the show today to talk about his legacy and to honor him on this particular day, Stuart Scott Day. And now let us say hello to the aforementioned Rich Eisen. What an honor it is on this day. I didn't even know when I reached out to Rich and his people about having him on the show that today at ESPN was being billed as Stuart Scott Day. And of course, we talked on Monday how Saturday's event is being dubbed the Fight Like Hell event in honor of that famous speech back in 2014 at the ESPY Awards. When I think of Stuart Scott, I think of Rich Eisen. And a few years ago, I had the honor of being on the Rich Eisen show, which I'm a big fan of, and sitting there talking to Rich meant the world to me. Now having him on my show is somewhat surreal, and it's just an absolute privilege and a pleasure to say hello to Rich Eisen today on Stuart Scott Day of all days. Rich, thank you so much for doing this. How are you?
A pleasure, man. All good. It's quite a day, huh?
It is. Did you know that today was Stuart Scott Day?
No, I did not until earlier this week, when ESPN reached out to a whole bunch of NFL or television partners, and the NFL Network let me know something was going up. At the same time, I looked down, I saw a direct message from Taylor and Sydney, Stuart's daughters, who share a Twitter address, saying, hey, we're doing this, and, you know, it's kind of crazy. We make you proud. And I'm like, my gosh, you know, of course. Stuart, looking down, beaming, no doubt about it, about his daughters and how they are forwarding his legacy, protecting his legacy, and burnishing it. And I can't believe it's coming up on 5 years.
Can we start at the beginning? When did you first meet Stuart Scott? Do you recall that first meeting?
I don't actually remember the first time I did, but it was definitely within the first few days that I arrived at ESPN, which was in 1996, in February of 96, and probably did my first Sports Center with him in about a month or so later. And just remember having met him and having already seen him on television. He arrived 2 years before I did. This holds true today. I mean, for anybody that wants to be successful in television or is wondering how to be successful in broadcasting, that the guy I saw off the air was the guy that I saw on the air. And that is the same for every single highly successful broadcaster that I've come across, that the person that you see on television is the person that they are. So they're true to themselves, they're true to their craft, and they're just unfiltered, putting out on the air their essence and spirit. And that I definitely remember whenever I got to know Stuart. I'm like, oh gosh, that's the guy I see on ESPN all the time, or ESPN2, which is what he was on primarily, which was part of the journey of Stuart making his mark on SportsCenter and how he went about it.
I was telling Troy, our producer, before we connected today, that for someone like me, born in 1982, but really starting to become a huge sports fanatic in the 90s, I understood who Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann were and what they meant to ESPN. They hosted the Big Show, and they were an institution. But for sports fans like me, born when I was born, you and Stuart represented that new era, because you spoke like us, you dropped, you know, pop culture references, the cool lines like Booyah and Other Side of the Pillow, and you're talking about Seinfeld on the air, and
yes, right.
You were our guys. At what point did you recognize, are the new faces of SportsCenter?
Yeah, you know what, it's funny, Stuart and I always talked about it, when did we become a team? Because when I arrived in 96, just to go, I guess, down SportsCenter history and memory lane, there were three main sports centers. There was the 6 o'clock in the evening Eastern time, and then the 11 o'clock Eastern, and then the 2 a.m. or 2:30 a.m. when I first got there is really when it was. You had a half an hour show on at 2:30 in the morning. And that was known at the time as the Feel Good Edition, because Kilbourne was pretty much manning that, along with either Carl Ravitch, Brett Haber, on occasion Mike Tirico would do it, Linda Cohn would do it. And that's where I began to get inserted every now and then. And then the 11 o'clock, as you mentioned, was the Big Show with Dan and Keith. And then the 6 o'clock in the evening show was anchored mostly by the trio of Bob Lee, Charlie Steiner, and Robin Roberts. And that was basically your rotation. And every now and then others would get spot started in a way. And You know, Haber and Brett Haber also was on with Kilbourne, and those were the usual, if you will, teams. But the only teams that were officially, I guess, recognized by management was that 6 o'clock Eastern and 11 o'clock Eastern one. And then in terms of the late night one that got re-aired every single hour on the hour the next day, that was kind of created when the 2 a.m. show got created, which was right around when I arrived to do an hour-long show. But the reason why I go through all this is there was really never any, you know, recognition that Stuart and I were a team. It was just every now and then we would open up our schedules, and that would be on occasion arriving in our you know, on our computer system just mere days before the next month was starting, which was an interesting way of living life. But we would just open up our schedules and look at it and see 2 a.m. across the board on our schedules, and we were together almost every time, 3-4 times a week. And we, you know, many years later, when the 1 a.m. Sports Center got started, that was re-aired at 2 a.m. and then the next morning every hour on the hour. This is before, you know, live new shows were put on the air every single morning. We would just look at each other and say, when did we officially become a team? Are we still even one right now? And when the 1 a.m. Sports Center began, they put me and Stuart on some sort of full-page ad that made it into the L.A. Times and other newspapers, and that's when we kind of looked at each other and we shrugged. We're like, I guess we're a team, you know, which is cool because we enjoyed working together and we're an interesting mix, to say the least, from you know, a person of color by way of Chicago and the Carolinas, and then a white Jewish kid from Brooklyn and Staten Island, thrown together with various pop culture interests and a sense of humor and a love for one another. You know, that was something that just really clicked. And I honestly, to this day, don't know the management team at ESPN that said, let's do this. I'm thankful for it.
What are you thinking early on? Because I feel like part of his legacy, he has, you know, many different legacies, but part of his legacy, at least for someone like me, was this man felt comfortable enough to be himself on television and to talk the way he talked behind the scenes on camera, because you're taught early on to, you know, wear the suit and be proper and do everything by the book. But he didn't do that. And I remember watching him in the 90s and be like, wow, he talks like that when he's doing the highlights. Like, it's more fun just listening to him than actually watching the highlight itself. When you're sitting next to him on the set and he's dropping those famous lines, all of them, you know, I mentioned a couple of them earlier, and there have been so many. You don't got to go home. You got to get the heck out of here. Can I get a witness? All this stuff. What are you thinking when you're hearing that? And does that inspire you to try to maybe let your hair down as well and start doing your own thing and giving your own, you know, your own personal flair and touch to the highlights?
Well, I'll be honest with you. When he was saying it, I was wondering half the time what the hell he was talking about. I mean, honestly. And on occasion I'd ask him where that's from, and he would tell me the origin. On occasion he would also tell me it would be, I think, like a niece or nephew of his, telling him about the latest song that he should be listening to, and this should be a catchphrase for him. He would get it from other people, friends, or obviously music and movies and television shows that he was watching of his own. And to be very fair, or just, you know, honest here, many times I would make a reference, he would wonder what the hell that was too. I mean, one time I made a reference, and we go to commercial break, and he goes, what was that? Mike, that's from Seinfeld. And he went, brothers don't watch Seinfeld. And I tell that story a lot because it shows that many things. The fact that we both came from different pop culture areas, and it meshed very well. Also, that I was speaking in a manner that he didn't understand, and that was in many ways fine with the predominant viewership of SportsCenter, but the reverse was not. That many people, while we were doing our shows together, viewed Stuart as provocative, and he rightfully took issue with that. Like, what's being so provocative? He's being himself, and he's talking in a manner that is him. he is coming from a place of his own upbringing and his own world and his own essence. And just because you don't understand what he's saying or the references he's making doesn't mean he's being exclusionary. He's actually being inclusive. And you're viewing it as being exclusionary, that he's hijacking the show that you used to like so much because you understood all pop culture references, and these are ones that are being made that clearly are not either that you don't understand, and you're viewing it as he's saying it's clearly not meant for you. And my Seinfeld references were the same way from his point of view. And how come that isn't viewed as provocative?
Mm.
And that is the absolute nexus of why it's, while heartbreaking, I mean absolutely heartbreaking, that he is not here anymore. And the speech that he made that will live forever to serve as his legacy at the ESPYs, winning the V Award for the Arthur Ashe Award for Courage, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is also emblematic of who he was as a broadcaster. You know, fight like hell, never ever fold. You are who you are, and nobody can ever take that away from you, whether it's the way that you want your sports center, the way that you want your television, or the way that cancer wants to take life. That doesn't ever take away your spirit, your essence, or who you are. I don't even know what to say other than that. I mean, it's very difficult to talk about it, even to this day, 5 years gone. But especially since I sat with him in the balcony of Radio City Music Hall doing the ESPY pre-award shows for ESPN and talking about Jimmy V and his speech and what it meant and the fact that Stewart would eventually be in the same breath of the same sentence about the same issues, the same way he'd been taken away from us way too soon is just mind-numbing, and my wife and I talk about that a lot, that we still can't believe that Stewart's gone and that Stewart's not with us anymore and the reason why.
You know, I recently rewatched that speech, and in the speech he talks about how just days prior he had multiple surgeries, didn't know if he'd be able to make it, couldn't move his jaw, and I see footage, we've been playing it all week, of him actually doing MMA training in the midst of going through his chemotherapy and the surgeries and whatnot. Were you aware, like, were you talking to him? Did you know how much he was struggling at that point? He spoke about it a little bit, but to hear that and to see how frail he was becoming, how difficult was it for him to actually stand there and talk about these things, knowing everything that was going on behind the scenes?
I did not know how sick he was when he stood on that stage. I did not. And, you know, to be honest, you know, I've been very honest with you through this conversation. He tightened his rotation, to use the phrase of his beloved sport of basketball, towards the end of his life. And, you know, on occasion we would be texting one another, just, you know, me just one of the last texts I sent him, or one of the fewer exchanges we had, that got fewer and further between, was when he, and this is amazing too, and I would love for ESPN to keep showing this, but he also did, a month before, if I'm not mistaken, the Larry O'Brien ceremony, giving out the trophy for the NBA championship to the Spurs, I believe. And he did it with just an amazing level of aplomb and grace and smoothness, I mean, he was cooler than the other side of the pillow, and that's not an easy ceremony to do. I mean, just on its face, you think, okay, you got a whole bunch of celebrating players and a coach and an owner and a commissioner, and you're up there, and it's real easy to bring this player in and that player in because they're all happy. I mean, of course, they're going to want to talk to you, but it's not easy to do. Everyone wants to grab the microphone from your hands, and you don't want to ask the same question of how does it feel every single time. And I sent him a text to tell him that was amazing. And, he wrote back, thanks, brother. You know, hugs to your wife because, I met my wife at ESPN and she was a production assistant. Pardon me. She was a producer and an associate producer and a producer. And she'd kill me for calling her PA. That just slipped out right there. She did Sunday Morning Sports Center some other great features in the tenure that she was there. And so she knew him and he knew her in many ways playing a little bit of Cupid on my behalf. And, cause that's always Stuart. Anybody will tell you he always wants people to love one another and be happy. And he will always ask you about your personal life and try and get to know you. And, that's the type of guy he was. I mean, like, he knew everybody and he knew, who they might be dating or wanted to date or what their likes were or dislikes or what team they liked or what school they were from. I mean, he was always gracious like that. But at any rate, he's like, hugs to give Susie a kiss. And, he knew I had a couple of kids at the time, give your kids a kiss. And that's basically the text that we went back and forth. And, on occasion I would hear from people that he was, talking to with more frequency, folks like Susie Calder or Laura Oakman. Hey, Stu's not doing that great. And then, that said, I hadn't heard anything for a few weeks. And there I was, January 4th, 2015, and on the set of Game Day Morning, and our executive producer comes up to me in the commercial break saying Stu died, and it hit me like a ton of bricks, man. Even though you'd heard that he wasn't doing well, the entire time when you hear he's not well and he's up there on the stage and giving that speech, or that he's thinner than he, had ever looked or might have looked a little bit, I don't want to say frail because the guy got ripped, but in terms of just his face and his body, you'd thought like maybe cancer is ravaging him. I just never thought he would die. Because of just who he was and the essence and the spirit and the love and the energy. I mean, the guy always had energy, like a 4-year-old. That the light would somehow be put out by cancer was just unheard of, and that just hit me like a ton of bricks. And it was kind of rare for me to be doing a live show as well, which is the forum in which obviously Stuart and I did most of our partnership. Was kind of remarkable. So to give me, on behalf of NFL Network, the platform to say words about him and who he was from the heart, I mean, that was really something else.
What do you miss most about Stuart Scott?
Everything, man. Everything. And the times when it happens is when big sporting events happen.
Yeah.
When the Bears made the playoffs last year, when North Carolina won the championship, when Jordan says Steph Curry isn't a Hall of Famer yet, when Colin Kaepernick's going through the workout, when the NBA championship is won by Kawhi Leonard in Toronto, when LeBron leaves for the Lakers, when LeBron gets Anthony Davis. I could go on and on. I would love to know what Stuart thought and how he would cover it and how he would talk about it and how we miss it. I mean, every day.
Do you recall him ever talking to you about MMA, about his love? Because he was a big proponent of mixed martial arts.
You know what? I think he kind of found that later in life, to be honest with you. I wish I could give you a story like that. I just, everything from, you know, college basketball, Vince Carter, football, when he went tried out for the New York Jets, God bless him. Those are the sporting moments that I was there for. But his love for MMA and fighting and getting in shape, I think, was really more later in life when I just wasn't as privy on a daily basis as what was going on with him.
Well, I can't thank you enough for a few minutes here, Rich, to remember him, to talk about him. I know you get asked a lot about him and enjoy speaking about him and remembering him. But on this day in particular here at ESPN, it means the world to me. In case you don't know, The Rich Eisen Show airs Monday through Friday from noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV's Audience Network, channel 239, and stream live on BR Live. It can also be heard on Sirius XM and across Fox Sports Radio and Premier Radio Network. He was the first talent, Rich was, to join the NFL Network way back when, where he continues to host NFL Game Day Morning on Sundays throughout the football season, as well as the network's Hall of Fame broadcast. And Rich's coverage of the NFL Combine has led to Run, Rich, Run, his annual 40-yard dash in his suit, which has since raised over $1 million for St. Jude Children's Hospital. You continue to do great work over there. I am a fan for life. You have done a lot for me behind the scenes. And again, just to have you on my show for a few minutes to talk about Stu has meant the world to me. So thank you so much,
Well, I mean, you've
Rich.
Got a hell of a platform you built for yourself, man. And you deserve it. You've worked hard. It ain't easy to break through and create what ESPN would like to have in their arsenal. I mean, reaching out to you and saying, let's get you in here and provide you with the platform that we have. So you've earned it, man. You should feel good about that. And for you to take your considerable platform and turn part of it over to this conversation is great. Stu is an incredible legacy. There are people like you of that age now that you were when you said you were watching Stu and I, and then just, you know, turn that clock back about 5-6 years and suddenly you're going to have some people who are growing up who might never have seen what Stuart did, which again blows my mind, and that Stuart's name is going to be synonymous with the manner in which he passed away, as opposed to the manner in which he conducted himself and broadcast before he passed away. So to have conversations like this are crucial, and you should feel proud of yourself, man. And, on top of it, you stay true to your Knicks, which I don't understand, but at some point that will turn. I hope we're all around to see that.
Eric. Yes. Amen. Thank you so much, Rich. I really appreciate it.
Brother.
All
you
the best.
Okay,
there he
man.
Is. The great Rich Eisen. What a huge honor that was for me. I remember back in 2016, prior to UFC 199, and you may know what UFC 199 meant to me. I remember him inviting me on his show in studio, because it was in Los Angeles, Inglewood to be exact, and just being on the set with Rich Eisen. And on Monday, I shared the photo of Stu giving me the fist bump at that Knicks playoff game in May of 1999, Game 3, Knicks had a huge win. Chris Dudley, you know the story by now. And then I'm sitting next to Stu's partner, and he wasn't just Stu's partner. That's Rich Eisen. Again, for kids like me, born in the 80s, sports fan in the 90s, where all that mattered was sports, SportsCenter, ESPN. I didn't get SportsCenter in Canada. So when my family would take vacations to the United States, I would sit there in the morning and rewatch the morning Sports Center over and over again and be like, wow, could you imagine working for this place? And I get to work for this place. And to hear later on, while Stuart was going through all of that, the surgeries, the chemo, he was training in MMA. We showed a clip of him and Chris Weidman and Gilbert Melendez. He was a big fan of mixed martial arts, a big proponent. And when you watch Saturday's event from Washington, D.C., the Overeem Rosenstruck event, it's being dubbed the Fight Like Hell event in honor of Stuart Scott, and this being Jimmy V Week at ESPN. I know a lot of you may not know who Stuart is because you're not from the United States, maybe you're just MMA fans, not casual mainstream sports fans. I wanted to do this, so I want you to have the knowledge and the insight as to how special this man was, what he meant to this company, and, you know, what the duo of Rich Eisen and Stuart Scott meant several years ago to sports fans like me. Let me just tell you that the V Foundation for Cancer Research was founded in 1993 by ESPN and the late Jim Valvano, the legendary NC State University basketball coach and ESPN commentator. Awards, the V Foundation does 100% of direct donations to cancer research programs. The foundation's endowment covers administrative expenses. It has awarded more than $250 million in research grants. It's an amazing thing. And the fact that they're dubbing and honoring this particular day as Stuart Scott Day and having Rich Eisen on the show really meant a lot to me. So I hope you enjoyed that. And I hope you know that long before mixed martial arts was mainstream, was even on ESPN, was ever broadcasted at this network, long before that, there were very few people in the mainstream sports press corps, if you will, who advocated for this sport, who trained in this sport, who pushed for this sport to be covered more. That didn't happen. That wasn't a thing. Now you see it everywhere. Now it's commonplace. Oh, Conor McGregor's back. You'll hear a few minutes on SportsCenter. You'll see events on ESPN. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that wasn't a thing. It was never here. And, you know, there's reasons. Maybe the sport was a little too, too different. Maybe it was too violent. Maybe it was just too niche. It was too new. Who knows why it wasn't covered as much. But there were people, and there were very few of them that were pushing for it. Stuart Scott was at the very forefront of that movement. And so he was a big fan, a legit fan, a proponent. And so to see an event in his honor this Saturday is a really cool thing. And I'm very happy and I'm very excited that ESPN and the UFC are doing this. Well done to all involved. And again, thank you very much to Rich and his team for doing that. That meant a lot. Now, in a minute, we're going to be joined by the great Mark Raimondi to talk about Conor McGregor, to talk about Khabib Nurmagomedov, to talk about all the comings and goings in the sport of mixed martial arts. I'll also tell you who will be the four contestants vying for the prestigious Helwani Nose Order Trivia Challenge belt. You'll hear from TST, Minimalist Tip of the Week. But first, let me tell you about our good friends over at Whoop. We're all looking for ways to improve our health. I certainly am. Whether it's being smarter about how we train. What is this? Because of the DC card?
Exactly. DSC? Exactly.
Nice touch. I want to hear a Canadian anthem when the UFC goes back to Canada. Just put that on your board. Okay. Anyway, making a better effort to get more sleep or simply thinking about our body's overall wellness. By the way, is it appropriate for me to be speaking while the national anthem is playing? That seems a little strange.
We'll let it slide.
Okay. Today's sponsor, Whoop, is a fitness tracker that goes beyond counting steps and provides 24/7 fitness, sleep, and recovery insights personalized to you. I feel like I'm going to run out of music here. There's nothing else like it on the market. Our lives cause different levels of stress on our body, from training to work and our lives at home. Whoop understands that and quantifies it for you into actionable metrics. With Whoop, you'll get a daily recovery score that looks at biometrics like heart rate variability, resting heart rate, and your sleep performance to let you know how ready your body is to perform. You're given insight into the intensity of your training, can track how strenuous your day is, and get next level sleep insight with suggested sleep times based on how strenuous your day is. I like it. We're playing it again. You can track, you could have gone with God Bless America or a bunch of, you know, that song that they play when the president gets sworn in. Anyway, you can track your sleep stages and cycles and see how much sleep you got compared to how much you actually needed. So it's a really great sort of data chart, if you will, that compares the old you to the new you. The Whoop Strap 3.0 has 5-day battery life. Yes, 5-day battery life. If only our phones had 5-day battery life. On-the-go charging, so you never need to take it off, is waterproof and has Bluetooth low energy. It can connect to other Bluetooth low energy devices so you can sync your heart rate to compatible treadmills, bikes, and rowers. Whether you're looking to be smarter about your fitness, better about your sleep, or be more mindful of your body's recovery, Whoop, W-H-O-O-P, has you covered. Don't wait for New Year's resolutions. Start being more in tune with your body now. If you're looking to be smarter about how you train, sleep, or recover, Whoop is offering my audience 15% off with my code Ariel, A-R-I-E-L. Go to whoop.com, that's W-H-O-O-P.com, and use the code Ariel, A-R-I-E-L, at the checkout and optimize your performance with our good friends over at Whoop. Please support them because they support us. Now, let us move along and say hello to our next guest, the aforementioned Mark Raimondi. It has been a while since Mark Raimondi has been on the show. Where have you been, Mark? Very busy. No time for us little people here.
Well, well, well. Come on now. Let's not get out of hand.
I mean, all this wrestling.
I'm sitting here on Tuesdays waiting for your text that I can be on the Wednesday show, and they never come. I don't know what's going on.
Lies. And if you want to blame someone,
blame
TSC.
Troy.
Yes.
Yes.
Always. But no, it's nice to have you. We've been very busy. We were talking a lot of big names, and you know, we like to spread the love, and the show has evolved a little bit, but we don't forget about the little people. We will never forget about you, Mark. And I felt...
Was that a short joke?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
I'm sorry if that's a sensitive subject and struck a nerve. But, you know, over the past 5 or so days, I have been doing a lot of talking about a lot of the big fights that have been finalized over the past week. And I feel like it's time for me to start asking the questions. And so I felt like it was the appropriate time to have you back on the show to start asking questions, because I feel like I'm the only one talking and I want to know how other people feel about this. So first, let us start with the big one. Conor McGregor is back January 18th, Las Vegas, T-Mobile against Donald Cerrone. Main event, UFC 246. The most simple question off the top is, did the UFC get this right? Was this the right matchup for Conor to return to?
I think it makes a lot of sense. I think that on several levels, it is the right fight. I think that the Cerrone fight would have been a bigger one had he still been on a winning streak, or maybe even just coming off the loss to Tony Ferguson. Cerrone's value, of course, dropped a little bit when he lost to Justin Gaethje a few months ago. But I mean, for a number of reasons, I still think it's a fight that makes sense. And I was really surprised when I saw people commenting on that fight on social media and saying, "Oh, you know, Conor McGregor is just getting this is an easy fight for him, and it's like a tune-up fight, and it's like a showcase fight." And it's like, I mean, there's certainly some elements of that going on, but Conor McGregor hasn't won an MMA fight since 2016. I mean, well, what are we talking about here? Like, I mean, the guy hasn't won in a very long time. Why should he get, a top contender who's on a long winning streak? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So, I mean, he himself is on a one fight, losing skid, I guess you could call it. So I think it does make a lot of sense. Cerrone is one of the biggest names available that does make some sense for McGregor. And I like the fight, personally.
I get the fact that Conor plays by a different set of rules. I get the fact that he's the biggest star in the history of the sport and that we are used to seeing him in big fights. And we're also used to seeing him push the limits. You know, he beats Aldo. What does he call for next? He calls for the lightweight title. And then he loses to Nate Diaz. What does he call for next? Immediate rematch at the same weight. And then he beats Diaz. And what does he do? He gets Eddie Alvarez for the lightweight belt. And then what does he do? He fights Floyd Mayweather. And then what does he do? He fights Khabib. And so I understand that we have been programmed to think these things, but you're right. He hasn't won since November of 2016. And I agree with you. I too was a little bit surprised, and maybe we shouldn't be surprised. Let's explore this for a second. I feel like ever since day one, ever since Conor entered the UFC and kind of, I don't know, poked at the status quo and tried to really upset everyone and really started to call his shots and was aiming for the champion, Jose Aldo. How dare you speak about him in that regard? Everyone has wanted to see him fall flat. And over the past year, he has given us a lot of reasons to say he is done. He has given us a lot of reasons to say this man has lost control. It's indefensible what he's doing. There's a lot of things to not like about what Conor has done since that Khabib fight. And I feel like people just want to see him fight tougher competition or competition that they think may give him a tougher test or knock him out or finish him once and for all because they want to confirm how they felt about him at the beginning. You get what I'm saying? They never liked him. Mm-hmm. They were never happy with what they say, and they don't feel like Cerrone is going to give him a tougher fight. The vocal minority that is complaining that I talked about, that you are talking about right now, I feel like that's where this stems from.
I think there's definitely an element of that. And then on the other hand, I think that if he were to get a top contender fight, I think people would complain about that as well. I mean, I think another portion of the fan base would complain about that because they would say what we're saying. He hasn't won since 2016. Why does he deserve to get a contender? Why should he fight someone like Tony Ferguson or Justin Gaethje? You know, they're on a title track. Of course, those guys probably want to fight Conor McGregor because of the money aspect, but I don't think there's any winning in this argument. I think it's it kind of is what it is. To quote the great Max Holloway.
Do you and yes, nice job on that one. Do you subscribe to the notion that just getting him a win at this point, and I don't think that they're serving up Cerrone on a silver platter. I think there's actually been a lot of disrespect thrown towards Cerrone's way. Like, I think that he is still a tough guy. Yes, he's lost his last two, but his last two losses were to Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje, arguably two of the top three best lightweights on the planet. But do you feel like, okay, just getting Conor back for the casuals, for the mainstream, for, you know, his confidence, the buzz that he brings, that's probably order number one, that maybe we could take a step back and say, hey, maybe it's better not to put him in there against a champion or a top contender and maybe just build him back up. That's probably – it's not something UFC has done in the past. Like, they always just love to throw everyone to the sharks. But I actually feel like this is the first time in a long time that Conor's team and the UFC is saying, like, you know what? Let's move slowly. Let's take a step back here and build to something.
100%. I totally agree with you. And I always thought – that it was a big mistake on the UFC's part to bring Ronda Rousey back into a fight with Amanda Nunes right off that Holly Holm knockout loss. I mean, it wasn't right off, but it was her next fight. It was a year and change later. But I always thought that was a huge mistake on the UFC's part, and they didn't fall into that trap again. They didn't throw McGregor back into a rematch with Khabib Nurmagomedov. He may have wanted it. He may have asked for it. We know he did. But they didn't do that. They exercise a little bit more caution because, look, I mean, at the end of the day, this is a business. How many times has this happened in boxing where, you know, a fighter will get, you know, they lose a fight and they get a little bit of a step down in competition. And Donald Cerrone, to me, is not even a significant drop off in competition. This is a guy, yes, he lost to Justin Gaethje. He was knocked out, but he fought a very competitive fight against Tony Ferguson back in June, and that fight didn't end because it was a TKO doctor stoppage because of Cerrone's closed eye, but he didn't get knocked out in that fight. You know, he fared pretty well against Ferguson, who, by the way, hasn't lost since 2012. You know, he's on an incredible streak. So I do think it makes sense for a lot of reasons, and Cerrone is not a big drop off, but there's nothing wrong with a little bit of drop off in competition. Look at who McGregor has fought in his UFC career, especially since he's been winning titles and fighting in title fights.
Now, how do you feel about the weight? Because that's the one thing I don't like about this particular fight, or at least initially. I feel like Conor is at his best at 155. I feel like Cerrone is at his best at 155. And if you go back to that first meeting back in September of 2015, where they're talking about, you know, oh, by the way, that meeting, I mean, that really didn't age well. That clip didn't age well because Cerrone's talking about how he's going to get – how Conor's going to get smoked by Aldo and how the guys at 155 are too big for him and all this stuff. Anyway, not my point. I just don't like the fact that it's happening at 155 – excuse me, that it's happening at 170 as opposed to 155 because I feel like they're both at their best at 155. And I feel like – and we could get to what it might signify, but even if he has – aspirations of fighting Masvidal or Nate. Why does this fight have to be at 155? I don't get that. That's the one thing I don't like about it. How about you?
I agree. I agree with you. And I don't like agreeing with you as much as I am right now. But I, too, think that McGregor's best weight class is 155. Donald Cerrone, I can go either way as far as what his best weight class is. McGregor has almost no cut at all to 170. I mean, I don't think he has any cut at all. I mean, I think he walks around in – you know, the high 160s, maybe around 170, maybe like the low 170s at the very most, unless he's put on some, you know, some muscle over the last, you know, year plus since we've seen him last. I don't know. That's a curious one to me. I don't think that is I think that favors Cerrone. I mean, it's a negligible difference, honestly, but I do think it favors Cerrone because he's a little bit of a taller guy, I believe, and he has had some success at 170. Didn't have a tremendous run there, but he looked pretty good at 170 in some cases. And I would also argue that his chin is better at 170. But I mean, it probably won't make a ton of difference, but it is a bit curious.
Okay, so when you hear that, all right, the reason why he's taking this fight at 170 is to start preparing if he wins, if all goes well, mm-hmm. for the Masvidal and or Nate fight. I think Masvidal is probably the front runner because he has that BMF title and he's coming off the win and all that stuff. I knew, and credit to Chael. Chael was the first one that kind of really, you know, smarted me up to this, but had a feeling when Dana White said, oh, Masvidal's too big for Conor, that he was really just trying to get under his skin, poke the bear, irritate him. And shortly thereafter, Conor tweeted about it and seemed very annoyed. And I know he was annoyed by that. So it seems like he wants to prove everyone wrong. Are you more into it once you hear about those plans? Or do you still feel kind of like I do that one has nothing to do with the other? You could have taken this fight against Cerrone at 155 and then jumped up to 170.
Yeah, it really, to me, it doesn't really matter a whole lot what weight class this fight is. And honestly, I don't think a lot of people who are watching, it will even resonate with them. So I think, I mean, if it's something that he's trying to do to prove to Dana White and the UFC, I don't think he needs to do that, honestly. I think the proof is in how much money that fight would make if McGregor goes out and knocks out Cerrone at any weight class. Doesn't matter if it's 155 or 170. If he looks good in that fight and he cuts a promo on Masvidal afterward, that's the fight to make. It doesn't really matter if it's a 170, 205, 265. I mean, that's going to be the fight regardless whether or not he fought Cerrone at welterweight or lightweight.
Historically, let's talk about Cerrone here for a second. Historically, I think it's fair to say he has not come up big in the big moments, right? Never won the WEC belt, never won the UFC belt. And it seems like every time he's building, and this has happened many times before, he's always been like the consummate, you know, company guy, pro, all that stuff. You know, he fights anyone. He fights Darren Till when it doesn't make any sense for him. He'll fight Leon Edwards when it doesn't make any sense for him. He has never complained about a matchup, but he'll go on these streaks and then he'll get a big main event fight or a big, you know, high profile fight like Ferguson, like Gaethje, and falter. RDA, falter. Nate Diaz, falter. So historically, it feels like he doesn't come up big. This almost feels like his last big fight, right? His last chance to maybe change that legacy. And I don't think he's shown us anything that will suggest otherwise. But I like the idea of him getting that one last chance to change. He'll never fight for a belt, it seems like, at this point. But maybe, you know, he gets the fight for the Conor McGregor belt, if you will, which in some people's eyes is bigger. So I like that. It's not being talked about and it won't be talked about as much because this is all about Conor. But I like that storyline as well as we prepare for this fight.
100%. This is a great story on both accounts. And arguably a better story if Cerrone pulls off the win, because he kind of exercises that demon of not being able to win the big one. And no, it's not a title fight, but like you said, in some ways, this fight is bigger than a title fight. If he beats Conor McGregor, it's a much bigger deal to the mainstream audience than even if he beat Dos Anjos a few years ago for the lightweight title, right? It's much bigger. I mean, he becomes a much bigger star. And then, I mean, he goes on and probably gets another one or two big money fights after that against someone. Maybe he rematches Masvidal. Who knows? But it's a bigger fight. And if he pulls it off, it adds a new layer to his legacy. And to me, I mean, Donald Cerrone's legacy is already set. He has the most wins in UFC history. He has the most finishes in UFC history. There's no ballots for the UFC Hall of Fame, but if there were, Ariel, he would be a first ballot UFC Hall of Famer, 100%. Yes. There's no doubt already. So he's almost, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's almost like he's coming into this fight, you know, playing with house money. You know, even if he loses, he gets the McGregor payday. He's already done, outside of winning a title, he's pretty much done everything he's needed to do. He's made a good amount of money. He's won a ton of bonuses. I believe he's also the leader in bonuses, or at least one of the leaders in fight night bonuses. So even if he loses, he's a Hall of Famer. His legacy's pretty much set. If he wins, that's a whole new layer to it. A whole new, I mean, we'll be talking about Donald Cerrone differently in 5 to 10 years if he beats McGregor now than before.
It has been a year to forget for Conor. 2019 has been just an absolute nightmare. It has been a disaster. He has spent more time in front of judges in courts than he has in the octagon. He didn't spend a second in the octagon. And like I said, it's been really hard to watch him go through this. It just seemed like every single, you know, I don't know, 2-3 week stretch, we're faced with a new controversy. And we were wondering, I think at one point, if he'd ever come back. And I think we were wondering throughout if he has hurt his legacy forever and if he can ever get back to where he once was and if he could ever be as popular as he once was. Now that the fight is a done deal and we've had around a week or so to digest it, does it feel like a big deal that he's coming back, or do you think that he has done irreparable harm to his popularity?
I think harm has been done, but I still think when the fight gets closer and closer, it'll be a very big deal. I think it'll be, I mean, it'll certainly be, depending on what happens the rest of 2020, it'll certainly be one of the biggest fights of 2020. I mean, I imagine, I know his plan is to fight again, but, you know, the best laid plans, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But it'll certainly be a big fight, and it may be a bigger fight than any one that happened in 2019, depending on how it shakes out. I do think he has done damage to his brand. I do think he has done damage to his image. And it's just, I mean, it's the small things like the, you know, knocking the guy's cell phone and stomping on it. And then, you know, he punched an older guy in a bar, which, you know, it's on video. You can't even claim otherwise. I mean, everyone saw it with our own eyes, and it just makes him look, it doesn't make him look like the Conor McGregor that rose to fame and fortune in the UFC. And then, of course, there's the lingering sexual assault allegations, which have been, you know, reported by, the New York Times, and I know that Conor's team has adamantly denied those, but they're still out there. You know, they're lingering, and it's going to be interesting to see how he kind of rehabilitates his image as this fight approaches. You know, is he going to be the same guy that comes out guns a-blazing with the trash talk like he did so many times before against Jose Aldo and Eddie Alvarez and Nate Diaz? Khabib Nurmagomedov, is he going to be that same guy, or is he going to take a step back and show us a different side of him since all these things have happened? I don't know. I mean, if I was a betting man, I'd say he's probably going to come full out. But he's been somewhat respectful to Cerrone on social media so far, so I don't know. But I'm very curious, and I'm very much looking forward to January 18th and the build-up to that fight. I think it's going to be really interesting.
Now, on Monday, we did a poll on the show, and it got almost 90,000 votes. I don't think I've ever done a poll that has garnered that much attention and that many votes. But the question was a very simple one. Which main event are you more looking forward to, Conor versus Cerrone, January 18th, or Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson, which is happening April 18th in Brooklyn, New York? 69%. Voted in favor of Khabib. Now, is this just, you know, again, the internet, and of course, you know, they're going to favor, you know, the hardcore fans fight, the title fight, the true title fight, and it's an amazing fight. 12 wins in a row versus 12-0 in the UFC, 28-0, dominant champion, most dominant champion maybe in UFC history against the former interim champion, all that stuff. You know, they booked it four times, fifth time's a charm, all that stuff. Or is that really the better fight? Is that really the bigger fight? Are you surprised that 69% of this 90,000 or so people who voted in favor of Khabib versus Tony?
Not surprised, given the audience is going to be mostly people who follow MMA pretty closely. I mean, if you're asking me which one I'm looking forward to the most, I mean, I would probably lean Khabib versus Ferguson too, because that is a fight that has been highly anticipated. They've tried to put it together four times. It hasn't come to fruition. And to me, I mean, and I think this may be an objective statement, it is between the two best lightweights right now in the UFC and two of the best lightweights ever to have ever done it. So I would probably, I totally get why people would vote that way. But if we're talking about the mainstream, man, I mean, all respect to Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson, I think Khabib's name over the last few years has crossed over into the mainstream. It has resonated more with the casual fan, especially after the McGregor fight and all that came with that before and after. But Conor McGregor is still Conor McGregor. He's still the biggest star in the UFC, and I think he's still that by a wide margin. So when it comes down to it, I think that more people will still probably watch McGregor Cerrone, and the casual fan base, the ones that are not watching pretty much every show anyway, are probably going to be more excited about Cerrone versus McGregor, in my opinion. And again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe things change between now and April when that fight happens. If that fight happens, hopefully that fight happens. But, yeah, McGregor's still McGregor. I mean, you know that. I mean, it's going to be hard to say that that won't be the bigger fight when it comes right down to it in terms of the audience.
I'm not just doing like shtick here. It legit makes me uncomfortable. When does the UFC announce fights 4.5 months in advance? They announced this Conor fight. They finalized it 1.5 months. Why this fight of all fights, the one that feels like it's cursed? Do we have to know about it 4.5 months in advance? Now, I know they have this press conference coming up the Friday before 245 next week in Las Vegas. But really, did we have to do this? Why? Why are we tempting the MMA gods? This actually legitimately, I'm not even joking, this is not a shtick. This makes me uncomfortable. This makes me feel like something bad has to happen between now and April 18th.
I mean, I hope that's not the case, but I get what you're saying. But look, I think that the UFC is, I applaud them for, you know, really the first few months of the new year of 2020 look really good, and they have it lined up very nicely. We don't know what's going to be the March headliner yet, but January there's McGregor versus Cowboy.
Yes.
February there's Jones versus Reyes. You know, March is, you know, a toss up. I know you reported that it could be Adesanya versus Yoel Romero.
Don't forget about Valentina. I love watching Valentina. Now that fight could be. Are you saying that fight's going to be a bit of a letdown?
No, I'm just talking about headlines.
All right,
of course. I'm all aboard the redheaded Valentina Shevchenko train. The auburn-haired champ.
Yes.
And then April, now we know it's Habib versus Ferguson in Brooklyn, and these are marquee fights, man. And I don't remember the last time the UFC has had the first quarter plus of the new year ready to go. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, they have it queued up for a monster first part of the year. If it, again, fingers crossed that it all comes to fruition and nothing falls apart, but it looks really damn good. So I applaud them for that, even though it is a little bit, April does seem very far away, but I don't know. I mean, if things were not going to come together, they're not going to come together. It's not going to be because they announced it in December.
I don't know if you remember this, but at the beginning of this year, as we were getting ready for the, you know, the dawn of the ESPN era and all the excitement surrounding that, some, including me, were lamenting the fact that it felt a little cobbled together. It felt a little thin. It felt like they announced the ESPN debut card very late. They couldn't find a main event. And so
they had to cancel the pay-per-view in January to put, you know, Cejudo versus Dillashaw on ESPN.
Yep. And so to your point, the fact that they have this laid out, I mean, let's go through it. Let's start with next week, Usman Covington and the three title fights. Phenomenal
tremendous
card. That's a tremendous card that's flying under the radar because of all the Conor Khabib stuff. And then you have Ortega, Korean Zombie to round out the year. But then, okay, let's start. The Conor fight, 246, January 18th. The January 25th card, Blades against JDS, but you also have Edgar Sanhagen, and top to bottom, it's very stacked.
It's a good card.
To try to go up against the Chris Cyborg debut on the same night in Bellator. Jones Reyes, Shevchenko Chukagian, maybe Woodley, Leon Edwards on that card, February 8th.
Wow.
In Texas, Houston to be exact. This is the one, now can I just, as we're glowing here and fawning, the one thing that bothers me, the one thing that really has me annoyed right now, why is Holly Holm fighting on January
18th? I was just going to say it.
When you're going to New Mexico less than a month later, with all due respect, Corey Anderson versus Jan Błachowicz is a fine fight. It's an important fight at 205.
Yeah.
But there is no reason why that fight should be happening in New Mexico instead of Holly Holm, who's fighting a month prior, right?
Completely. Yes, like, I completely agree. And I knew that was what you were going to say, even though we hadn't talked about that. But it boggles the mind. I mean, if you announce Holly Holm is fighting in the Albuquerque area, that sells out in a second.
Yes.
It sells out. It sells out literally in the matter of seconds. I don't get it. I honestly don't get it. I know that I read, I believe it was in the Albuquerque Journal, that Raquel Pennington had a conflict that date.
Oh, come on.
That's okay. Holly Holm could fight someone else.
Yeah.
I mean, she could fight anybody.
Does it have to be against Raquel? Come on.
No, it doesn't have to be. I mean, that was the fight that I think that they both wanted, and the UFC wanted it because it was booked for, you know, Australia UFC 243. But man, Holly Holm in Albuquerque, I know they're calling it Rio Rancho, but I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's Albuquerque.
Yeah.
Her against the, you know, a mop in the corner draws, you know, a sellout crowd in that arena.
Yeah, that's the one that I feel like they misfired on. But then you have Hooker, Felder. Did you see that stare down earlier today?
I did.
In New Zealand.
That's a good one.
So that's perfect because Hooker is repping New Zealand. That's great. We'll find out about March 7th soon enough. Maybe Israel versus Yoel, we'll find out. And then you have the Brazil card March 14th. And then we get to London, March 21st. And it seems like for the first time in a long time, you've got a ton of British fighters who are doing a lot of exciting things. Of course, Darren Till at the top of the list. But you've got Arnold Allen isn't fighting on that
Arnold
card.
Allen, yeah.
He's fighting on the North Carolina card. That makes no sense. But here's the thing I want to ask you about. So I found out recently that they're trying to do Jared Cannonier versus Robert Whittaker on that March 7th card. Great fight. Makes a lot of sense. Cannonier could make a strong case for being next in line for the middleweight title. But he fights the former champ. It makes sense. Whittaker's side wants to fight Darren Till in England. They want to go to England. Whittaker told me last week he's never fought in Europe. He'd really like to fight in Europe, and he likes the Till fight, and Till's been campaigning for it. Which do you like? But I personally like Till versus Whittaker, and I like it in England as opposed to the Cannonier fight. What about you?
I do too. I do. I like that fight a lot. I kind of understand, and I wonder, because Till's performance against Gastelum wasn't phenomenal, so I wonder if that's why he's not getting that, you know, that fight against Whittaker right away, because Whittaker versus Cannonier, the winner of that is right there for the title, right? I mean, right there. I know there's Paulo Costa and there's Yoel Romero, but the winner of that fight, especially, I mean, either one of them is right there. Whereas Till, maybe they're not as high on him at middleweight, but I don't know. I mean, just for marquee value, I mean, Whittaker versus Till in London would be a big one, I think.
Okay, one last one that I want to get your take on. Yuan Yan Jacek, Zhang Wei Li,
yes.
Strawweight title fight, March 7th.
Love
Ioana
it.
Is on a one-fight winning streak. Does that even make sense, one-fight winning streak, or is it a one-fight win streak? You get the point.
Yes.
And not that long ago, we thought that she was in purgatory, lost twice to Rose in the title fights, then goes up to 125, loses to Shevchenko. But then she beats Watterson, looks great. There's all drama about her weight. She makes the weight. Now she gets a title fight. Did they get that one right, in your opinion?
I think they did. I think that's a really big fight. To me, that's one of the biggest fights in UFC strawweight history, because it feels like it could be a passing of the torch, or it could be the former champion coming back and taking back her crown. I like that fight quite a bit. And there are certainly reasons why I think that's the right fight. Tatiana Suarez, she has said she's not ready to go yet. She's still dealing with that neck injury that she re-injured against Lina Ansaroff earlier this year. And Rose Namajunas still kind of up in the air as to when she wants to fight. I know she said on your show that she wants to come back, you know, January, February. But I could see her getting the winner of that fight between Zhang and Ioana.
We were just talking. I want to see her ease her way back into things. What do you think about Carla Esparza rematch?
I'm completely fine with that, but I also would understand if she got the winner of that of the title fight. I mean, either way, I mean it really is up to her. But Suarez is still a big question mark, and that division is very interesting, and it's moving along. But I think they got it right. I mean, who else really would make sense for Zhang at this point, right? And on that date.
Probably the only one I know. Initially, they were trying to do Rose versus Zhang,
right? Which hey, who would really complain about?
Now,
that?
I like this better. There's nice symbolism here, right? The former champ,
yes,
coming
exactly.
back, the new king or queen, I should say, about to embark on her reign. But first, she has to get by the former queen, the face of the division for so many years, the one who put the division on the map. It's perfect.
Completely agree.
The only thing that would have made it better is
do we know where that fight is? We know where that is yet?
Vegas.
In March.
Yeah.
Got it. I mean, I
would like to see it in China.
Personally, I would have liked to have seen it, overseas. Yeah. But that's fine. And what about Cormier versus Stipe 3? What's going on?
No.
What's going on there?
Right now, they're kind of at a stalemate because of Stipe's eye. Still hasn't fully recovered. And I think he's, very cautious about that, and he should be. But also, I don't know if he's very eager You know, when I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, he's like, not interested in that fight at
all. I know,
I don't think the Tyson Fury thing is happening or has any legs to it whatsoever. They recently announced, or at least it's been reported by Dan Rayfield, that they're going to do the Fury Wilder rematch, which everyone wants to see way more than a Stipe versus Fury fight. So I don't know. Right now, I would guess if you look at the schedule, April 18th, they've got their main event. They're not going to fight on that
card.
And then May historically is in Brazil, and then so maybe June, July, International Fight Week. That could be the earliest that we see that fight. And I'd love to see it one, you know, because DC's kind of just, he's sticking around for this one fight. That's it. He's done after this. So you'd like to see it sooner rather than later so they can all move on.
I thought that Houston would be a perfect final fight for DC.
DC accepted December 14th. They offered him December 14th. He was ready to go relatively, you know, quickly and make that quick turnaround after the loss in August, but unfortunately Stipe wasn't ready. By the way, speaking of the heavyweight division, what a Saturday we have lined up. We've got Andy Ruiz going up against Anthony Joshua.
That's right.
In the rematch, phenomenal heavyweight title fight. We've got Jairzinho Rozenstruik, who I'm very high on, against Alistair Overeem, and then the biggest of them all, Alberto El Patron against Tito Ortiz, with the WWF or WWE title on the line and the UFC title. I don't know what that whole stipulation is about. And Jorge Masvidal in the booth. Like, what are the chances Jorge's going to do any sort of research about this card at all? I hope he does no research and just wings it all. But that's a great Saturday we've got lined up this Saturday.
I think that they will get pay-per-view bias just because Jorge Masvidal, the BMF himself, is in the booth.
Yes.
By the way, he's at your alma mater right now.
He was there yesterday. Did you know that there's
he's home. He's home now. Okay.
Yeah, there's some famous like booster that brings famous people to come sit with him at Syracuse games. Like if you look at this guy's Instagram, he has all these famous people that hang out with him. But, I don't mean to be, you know, a party pooper, but I don't know if they're actual buds, if you get what I'm saying.
No, it's fine. I have one more question for you.
Oh yeah, please.
You said that May. I know that is the traditional
a
card in Brazil, but that will be UFC 250.
Ooh.
Will there be anything special for UFC 250?
Wow, look at you looking ahead. I have not heard anything. That doesn't mean it's not happening.
So
much has been going on for the first couple months. So I haven't heard anything yet, but that is a good question. I wonder if they're going to make a big to-do. I mean, they made a big to-do for the 500th event in New York last month. I wonder if they'll do it. I would say, like, the best part about numbering the events is to have a reason to make the events a little more special.
I agree.
So it would seem like a miss. Like, when Bellator didn't really make Bellator 100 into a big event, or was it 200? 100 and 200 they didn't make into a big event.
Right.
I felt like that was a big miss. Like, if you're going to number, then you might as well celebrate those milestones.
I think 250 is a big one, right? They didn't do anything big for 150, but 250 is more significant. You know, you're a quarter of the way toward UFC 1000.
Now, Mark, we've got a lot of exciting things going on. As you mentioned, we've got, you know, the loaded first quarter. As we talked about very briefly, 245, you'll be there next week in Las Vegas?
Yes, sir. I'll be there.
The 2019 Professional Fighters League season concludes with 6 world title fights at the biggest event of the year. The PFL Championship, New Year's Eve, New York City, Madison Square Garden, 6 $1 million belts on the line. Who will be the 6 PFL champions crowned? It'll be a rematch between Kayla Harrison and Larissa Pacheco with $1 million and the 155-pound female championship on the line. Fighters are looking to build legacies, and I'm looking for a knockout victory. The ball doesn't drop until the PFL belts are raised. Don't miss one of the biggest nights in MMA. The action starts at 7 p.m. Eastern, and you can watch it only on ESPN2. I know that you've been a little out of touch with the show, but we've been doing something on this program called TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week. I don't know if you know this, but TST is a proud minimalist. Like, this is a lifestyle for him. It's no gimmick. It's no joke. He actually has no furniture. He eats on the floor. He only owns a yoga mat. The guy has no possessions, nothing to his name. And so I'm fascinated by this, and each and every week he gives us a tip. So if you want, you could stick around for it. Are you interested in that?
I am interested. Troy, you're actually going to be in Las Vegas because that is the opposite of minimalism. That is excess
I know,
to the max.
I know, and I've never expressed any interest in going to Vegas, but if it's to hang out with you guys as part of the company, sure, I'll do it. That's a one-time thing.
Should we go and paint the town red, Troy, next week?
Oh, what Mark, do you think? I'm down. Don't tempt me with a good time.
All right.
TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week.
Okay,
yes.
Mark, thanks for joining for this. Okay, so I had said in a previous episode that when you're determining whether you should get rid of things, you have to ask yourself the question, does this add value to my life? So, as I know, the average American household has about 300,000 items in it. And so many of those items go completely unused. They're sitting there just collecting dust. And so if you guys are trying to cut back on some of the things in your life, then I suggest following this rule, which I learned from my minimalist influences. It is called the 90-90 rule. So if there is an object in your house that you have not used in the past 90 days and will not use again in the next 90 days, then you should consider letting it go. And chances are that object probably doesn't mean that much to you. And once you actually do let it go, make the decision to, the next day, you know, the moment that you get rid of it, it might hurt a little bit, but the next day you're probably going to not feel it anymore and you're probably going to forget that you even owned it. So, Ariel, what I've learned from becoming a minimalist is that when you start to get rid of things, get rid of people, objects, activities that don't add value to your life, you're whittling life down to its necessities. And when you whittle life down to its necessities, that's when you really start living.
Mark, what do you think of this? These gems, this wisdom.
I was a little bit taken aback when he said people. So what you're saying is that at some point you may realize that Ariel Helwani is not adding any value to your life.
Wow.
And you're going to jettison him into the abyss.
I don't think
the 90-90 Helwani
rule. I don't think it'll be that way with Ariel, but when I became a minimalist, I certainly got rid of some people that, you know what? You don't make my life any better. You don't enhance my life in any way. And it's not that I don't like you anymore. I have nothing against you. It's just you are not a great influence on my life, and I don't need people that aren't going to. You know, I like to surround myself with people who make me better. And right now, Ariel is one of those people. We'll
wow.
see if, we'll see if anything changes there, but I tend on keeping him around.
Wow.
You're on the clock, Helwani.
Wow. It's a lot of pressure, but I am honored, at least for now, to be included in that mix. You know, I've never actually, like, gone through my phone and said, you know, I don't need this person in my life. I need to weed myself of this person. But maybe I should do that.
You should. Listen, I go through these things all the time, being a minimalist. Like, I go through my phone all the time, deleting photos that I don't need, that I'm not going to look at anymore, deleting contacts that I don't need anymore, deleting apps. I only have 6 apps on my phone, Ariel. I don't have any social media apps because I know how distracting and tempting they are.
That
so I really have, if I want to go scroll through Instagram mindlessly, which I do from time to time, I'm a young person. I like Instagram. Mm-hmm. But I have to re-download the app.
Oh my God.
And go out of my way and make it a whole process. Like, I have to really want to look at Instagram.
That is such a pain. Let me tell you something. I got a new phone yesterday because my old phone broke. And for an hour, they had to, you know, take it in, blah, blah, blah. I did not have a phone in my possession for 65 minutes, tops.
And it's a great feeling, right?
I've never been more stressed. I was so stressed. I was so anxious the entire time. I felt like I was going to faint.
I think you need minimalism more than anyone I've ever met.
Yeah, well, there you go. See, only on this program do you hear from Rich Eisen, a legend, a broadcasting legend. You hear from Sick Mark Raimondi on a slew of fights that have just been announced. And you get minimalist tips from TST. Where else? Who's making content like this at ESPN? No one. Dare I say, no one has or ever will.
I really hope there are no minimalists listening to this last conversation.
Great stuff. Mark, feel better. I will see you in Las Vegas.
Yes. See you both there.
Can't wait. Can't wait. TST, great job.
Thank you.
I like when we expose people. Whoever's sticking around for the last segment, I like how we get their, you know, their reaction to this minimalist tip of the week segment that we do.
Mark was, I'm mad at Mark. He was giving us a hard time before the show. Oh, I'm sick. Oh,
yeah.
The weather's getting to me. He's out in the Los Angeles.
I know.
We're out here on the East Coast suffering through snowstorms.
I know.
And he's complaining about the LA weather.
I know. I know people don't like to hear about the weather, but yes, he was complaining quite a bit about the fact that it, like, what were they in the 60s? He was saying, like, come on.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Sorry. I'll have, bone to pick with them when we're out in Vegas together.
Get out of here, bro.
All right, Eric, we've got some reviews here
okay.
from some of our fans. So the first one comes from arguably the best name that I've ever had from a reviewer. This is Gucci Poodle.
Okay.
Gives us a 5-star review titled "The Best There Is." And he simply says, "Ariel is the best MMA interviewer the game has. All the top names." Which is very true. I cannot complain there. King 6 has 5 stars for you as well, titled "Best Show." "I'm a latecomer to your show, but I have gone back and listened to all the past and present shows. The Monday and Wednesday shows get me through my work days. Thank you for being you." Awkwardness and all.
Oh, he appreciates my awkwardness. Where have you been, bro? But I appreciate it. Anyone who wants to jump on the bandwagon, I mean, I will admit, this train is kind of moving a little fast these days, so you better get on and get your tickets now, you know what I mean? But no, we love you, and I kind of feel like people may think that this particular segment is just me trying to boost my ego with you reading these reviews, showering me with praise. Like, is anyone ever writing anything negative about me, or is it always positive?
Oh, certainly. There's certainly some negative ones out there.
But you don't pick them.
No, because I know how fragile you are.
I mean, fragile.
Even when I'm mean to you,
yes.
You get mad at me.
I get
and
very
it's
mad.
It comes from a place of love, because I want you to be better.
I am fragile. That's kind of like, you know, all talent. I feel like we all have fragile egos, and we need to be told constantly how great we are.
Oh, yeah. Why don't you tell me how great I am?
Well, you're doing a great job on this program. I'm looking forward to having you with us for the road show next Friday, December 13th. Tickets on sale right now, and I hope everyone... I think 5 people are going to show up. I'm very worried about this, but they tell me that more are expected, 300 plus. So we shall see. Anyway, we're out of time. UFC back this Saturday, and it's a great Saturday, combat sports. Like I said, Ruiz, Joshua 2, you got the Combate Americas pay-per-view, you've got the UFC back on the mothership, early prelims on ESPN Plus, but then starting at 7 and then at 9 for the main card, it's on ESPN. Main event, Alistair Overeem, Jairzinho Rozenstruik, and it's all for a very, very good cause. It's the Fight Like Hell event in honor of the late, great Stuart Scott, and all the proceeds, all the donations from that Saturday's event. There'll be plenty of segments and ways in which you can donate to the V Foundation. It will all go to the Stuart Scott Fund, so that's a great cause. And like I said, in case you don't know, I thought it was really important. I know we didn't talk about a lot of MMA at the top, but with Rich Eisen coming on this show, it's just such a huge honor. He doesn't work for ESPN anymore. He doesn't do a lot for ESPN, but for him to come on and talk about his legacy, Stuart's legacy and their friendship and his impact on this company, that just really meant a lot. So I wanted you to know about that as you watch Saturday's show and you maybe learn a thing or two about him and get educated why they're talking about this man, Stuart Scott. It's because he was that special. And important to note, big proponent of the sport, big fan of the sport, and was pushing for the sport to be covered more long before it was. So that was great. Thank you so much to Rich Eisen. Thank you so much to Mark Ramundi. Thank you so much to TST. And as always, thank you so much to all of you for listening, downloading, subscribing, all that stuff and more. Enjoy the fights this weekend. We'll talk to you next week.